Let's go back to a Go Light original.
Andy came to Shawshank Prison in 1947.
Why'd you do it?
I didn't, since you ask.
You gonna fit right in.
There are places in the world that aren't made out of stone. There's something inside they can't touch.
Hope can drive a man insane.
You better be sick or dead in there, I kid you not!
I guess it comes down to a simple choice, really. Get busy living. As he died.
Hello and welcome to Let's Go Back to the Shawshank Redemption. My name is Owen Sheehan, and every week myself and Sue Murphy go back and watch a film or television show that has a particular meaning for that week's special guest. This week, we are delighted to be joined by Andrea Gilligan, host of News Talk's Lunchtime Live. Andrea, what is the crack?
Good, not too bad. All good here in Marconi House in Dublin. Just living the COVID life, you know.
If you're joining us for the first time on this, you might have missed Jess Kelly a couple of weeks ago. She warned us that she knew nothing about films and then happened to blow us away with her incredible knowledge about that one film that she was talking about. You have given us the same warning, Andrea, so we're expecting big things about Shawshank.
Yeah, I wouldn't expect to be so blown away though by my in-depth knowledge. I feel like I should never have said that by now. I'm expecting to know a huge amount, but no, I have to be really straight with you. Like, movies and film and music wouldn't be well known for my love of or knowledge of. In actual fact, I probably would be better known for my lack of knowledge around both topics. But I do have a couple of different genres of either like music or film that I really like. And when I really like something, I'm massively into it. But if it doesn't fall into the categories of what I like, I have absolutely zero interest. I'm not great at broadening my appeal, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I mean, I think most of us are the same. You know, we have what we like. So, what is it about Shawshank that appeals to you then?
So, for me, like, but if somebody was to describe Shawshank Redemption to me now in 2021, it has all the hallmarks of everything that I like in a good movie. It's kind of this crime related. It's legal drama. It's you know, to do with the prison service. It's everything I like in a good drama, film or movie. But the thing about Shawshank Redemption is that it's actually totally different, because if I was to sit here and tell you today that, you know, right, this is a story about a guy who gets arrested and he ends up in prison, and it's kind of follows his whole life during his custodial sentence, you probably have in your mind a little bit of, like, you know, Orange and Black on Netflix, or, you know, the usual kind of prison movies that you watch where it's all a lot of violence and you know, a lot of kind of just that whole, you know, macho team like that you'd get throughout those kind of movies. But it's not about that at all. It's totally different. It's a movie about loyalty and friendship and the really kind of bizarre relationship that strikes up between the two sort of main characters. And it's kind of anything but the usual, like, prison, you know, murder related film. And I think for me, that kind of, I don't know, not that it challenged me, but, like, you know, on the outset now, as I'm describing it to you, maybe not all that well, it probably isn't something I'd have an interest in, but I loved it. I absolutely loved this movie. And I remember I saw it quite early on. It's one of the movies I have a pretty distinct memory of watching, because I watched it with my dad and he was really interested in wanting to see it. And I have a feeling that might have been maybe in first year in school. So that would have been in like 1997, I think I first saw it. We watched it on numerous occasions, and not sometimes deliberately, like sometimes by accident it might just be on and you'd watch it, or, you know, in more recent years we might just stick it on and, you know, and watch it back if we were looking for something on a Saturday night to watch. But I don't know, I think when you watch it over the years in later life, there's a lot more that comes up in the film, you know, that I may not have seen as a young kind of 12 or a 13 year old, obviously. But yeah, for me it's probably one of my go-to kind of films.
You've touched on a lot of the things that we like to ask at the top here about when the first time you watched it was, what the reason was, your impressions, and how it changes over time. Can we just stick with that first moment?
Yeah.
Then? Do you actually remember it, and, I don't know, how you felt or what this movie did to you and how it spoke to you, I guess, when you saw it for the first time in the late 90s?
You see, for me, I think at the time watching it, it was probably like, you know, you had a white man and a black man. And my memory of watching those films, you know, probably in the kind of the mid 90s would have been like, it was really weird. My parents used to let me watch movies with them. I suppose then I was probably 12 or 13, maybe it was a bit different, but I remember watching loads of different soaps and stuff with my parents down through the years. Another one actually about prisons that I used to watch with my mum, a drama series called Prisoner that was an Australian based program. And I remember, like, I suppose I probably thought it would be quite like that, or other movies I would have watched would have been more about the difference in the relationship between, you know, it would be black and white people in the States. And then this sort of was this mad contrast of how you have this, you know, really well-to-do kind of wealthy white banker who is accused of murdering his wife. And that sort of plot plays out through the, obviously, the entire film. But it's more to do with kind of the, you know, it's probably while watching the relationship develop between Andy Dufresne and Morgan Freeman in World Red in the show that kind of, I think when you watch it when you're older, it's a little bit like, for me, kind of what strikes me now in more recent years is the loyalty part of it. And I think maybe as obviously a child or a young teenager, I didn't really see that growing up, you know.
That's interesting. So I'm actually interested to get your perspective on it, because if you're coming at it from the perspective, Andrea, of somebody who maybe doesn't have as much of a film buff background as, say, Sue Murphy has here.
That's me.
I'm interested in your take on Shawshank in general before rewatching it this week, about where it stands in your pantheon of great movies, because it is the number one rated film in IMDb of all time. It is considered by so many people to be the greatest film of all time. Is there a snobbery about it that exists because everybody considers it to be the best film of all time?
Yes, absolutely. Like, when you think about how much, I think we were talking about this before, Shawshank made like 58 million at the box office when it came out. There wasn't a massive marketing thing about it. Actually, the film that was up against it was Speed. Right. That cleared out the box office.
I really like that too.
I'll do that another time.
Love Speed.
Like, they're such different films, and I think Forrest Gump was up against it in terms of Oscars, that kind of thing. So you had a lot of dramas that were around at the time that were kind of heartfelt dramas that I think people were just a bit like, oh, here's another one. But there's something about The Shawshank Redemption, I think, that makes it so rewatchable. Like, you can go back and watch it over and over again, any parts of it, like anytime you come across it, it's just very easy to watch. And I think critically over the years, people have changed their perception of it. Like, the Empire used to publish this thing where they talked about like the really bad reviews that they give of films, and they'd be like, look, we gave this 5 stars and it was absolute shite, we don't know what we were thinking. And I think that's kind of happened with Shawshank over the years. People have come back to it and gone, you know what, this is actually really well written. There's a really good main character. It's a good story. And they developed the book really well. And on top of that, you have the word of mouth that's happening with people where you're just like, have you seen that film, Shawshank Redemption? It's so good. Like, the end of it's brilliant. Like, that was happening at the same time. And it's amazing. I don't know of any other film, really, that's had the same. The only one I could really think of when I was thinking about it was Little Miss Sunshine, that had the same kind of, like, drive from people talking about it. But I definitely think it's just one of those ones that people have reconsidered over the years, definitely critically anyway.
When I think of Shawshank, I think of GEA players, because it is the thing that is beside any GEA player when they're asked for their favourite movie. Shawshank Redemption is
really?
Always the one that they say.
Yeah.
And I don't know why. Like, I mean, is anybody willing to offer a hypothesis for why that is? What is it about the Shawshank Redemption that speaks to GEA players?
It's that plan where he gets out, yeah. You know, he digs the tunnel at the end.
The tactics. That's
tactics. Managerial tactics. That's what it is.
That's kind of the one thing that always strikes me about this, is that it is so unbelievably loved. And I think there's probably this underlying current when people watch it now where it's like, oh, everybody thinks this is great. But yeah. I don't know. I haven't seen this. Like, I'll hold my hands up here and say I've only ever seen Shawshank Redemption twice. And the first time I saw it was in 2014. I remember when I first watched it, and I wasn't blown away by it. But I think it was to do with the fact that this has to be the best movie of all time. Now that I'm watching it, now that everybody has come to this consensus 20 years later that it's the best movie of all time. On rewatch, though, I loved it. I absolutely loved it. I really enjoyed. It's kind of even hard to put your finger on why exactly it's so watchable, when there's a lot of it that is almost cliche because every line is quotable. Every line is so well known and it's recycled time and time again. Like without ever seeing it once, you can almost tell what happens just by scrolling through memes on social media down through the years. But it is such a brilliant rewatch. And I think it comes down to just that's that theme of loyalty that you mentioned there, Andrea, the two main characters, a brilliant Morgan Freeman and the narration throughout, which is something that I don't love. I don't love a narrator in a movie, but something that works so well in this. And it just draws you in so easily.
It's funny when you say that because I actually don't like films that are narrated either. I hated in Sex and the City, for instance. Not a great comparison, Sex and the City and Shawshank Redemption. But I didn't like the start of the series when like Carrie Bradshaw used to narrate the entire program. But so like, that's why for me, there's some parts of this that, you know, I kind of would think, oh, I'd have no interest now in this. But there's also something that's quite simplistic, I think, about the plot as well of the movie. Like it's just, I think there's so few, there's a couple of really, really, really good like scenes in it that I, you know, obviously we mentioned there, the one about digging out the tunnel and when he comes out and the drain is shit. And like there's all of these really like just, you know, very quotable like scenes and lines from the movie. But just, I don't know what it is. There's a kind of a, in something that should be really depressing and really sad, there's something quite positive and uplifting, I think, about the whole movie as well. And I always really liked the parts about the rehabilitation element to the movie. You know, the fact that when you have the likes of, you know, Morgan Freeman is going in and he's obviously coming up for his parole and he's, you know, pitching his case. And like, for me, there's kind of an interest in the, just to get an insight into how that might work, you know, when you go and you pitch your case to be paroled and kind of the year that he nearly doesn't give a shit about it, he ends up getting it. And like the actual understanding of how rehabilitation works, maybe in later life when I, you know, maybe would have looked into that through work and would have done a lot of stuff on rehabilitation with the prison service and stuff that, you know, I don't know, maybe it was just because that was my first exposure to something like that at kind of a younger age that I just found it always quite interesting.
I think the GAA thing as well, the other thing I was going to say was it's a love story. It's a love story between two guys. And Tim Robbins has said that so many times that he thinks it's a non-sexual love story between two friends. And something else, because I was talking to one of my friends about it and I went, what is it about it like that men like so much? Because it allows men cry. And I was like, oh, okay.
Nail on head.
Yeah.
I was like, I didn't think of it like that. And he's like, yeah, like men aren't going to like cry about their friendships, like, but that allows you to cry and think about the important. And there is, like, think about it, like at that time there wasn't a lot of films that would have dealt with that, like romance. Yeah, like that was definitely a more recent thing. But yeah, maybe that's the appeal for GAA players, that they can openly cry.
Yeah, like it's really interesting that sort of I don't know that conduit of being able to communicate on an emotional level from one male to another is something that is done quite well throughout, and is something that maybe I don't know maybe speaks to your classic GAA player who picks this up so much. Like it is interesting as well what Andrea says there about the prison system and what that said to her about the prison system and what that says to you about it. Like, I always find it fascinating that this seems to be the inverse of society a little bit, what we see within Shawshank, that we can see quite clearly the people running the prison are evil individuals. They are the bad guys in it. The warden and the guards are the evil people in the movie. The prisoners, the criminals are almost the good guys throughout. The society that exists within the movie, within the prison, I should say, is almost like a better version of society than real life is. I mean, you have Morgan Freeman, a man living, a black man living in 1940s America, who is the king of the castle when it comes to Shawshank. Arguably, a better life for him inside the prison than might exist for him in the United States outside of the prison. I always find that interesting, and how, with a few obvious examples, there is, I guess, a placid nature to the way the individuals within the prison organize themselves and interact with one another. The one thing, Andrea, that we need to do here, and this is really important, Sue Murphy has put together a diary of watching this movie. So are a number of emotional moments in this movie that get to us all, I think, and Sue has kept a log of the time when she was moved to tears.
You're not going to quiz me now or something, are you? No. I'm really bad at quizzes too.
No, I was just like, because I said to Owen, we were talking about this first, because when you said Shawshank, I was like, oh no, I'll never get through this without crying, because like Shawshank just makes me cry so much.
Really?
I think it's just so great.
I find it kind of, I don't want to say happy, but like, definitely more uplifting than I found it emotional. Like,
yeah, but I definitely think that what I was saying to Owen is that it's nearly like childbirth. Like when you get to the end of it and he's redeemed, you're like, oh, I've forgotten all of the stuff that happened before and now he's out. It doesn't really matter. And like can you think about the stuff? Like, so I've made my list. My list is all the times I've cried, and I think it's 7 times I cried. Right?
Wow.
The beer scene. I just love the beer scene on top. Like, that just makes me, like, that he sits in the corner, he doesn't even take the beer himself, doesn't even want the drink, just wants his pals to have it, and I'm gone. Like,
the friendship part.
So lovely, absolutely lovely. Andy gets back after being beaten half to death. Do you know when they, like, leave the present for him? No, never get past that scene without crying. I just think it's so emotional. when Andy gets the books, when they all come in and he's just like, the guards are so delighted with him. They're like, well done, you better get this out of here. Like, and I just love that scene. I think it's so lovely.
Which part is this now, when they get the delivery and they finally got back to his letters?
Yeah. And he gets the boxes of books into the reception and he has to get rid of them really, really quickly. But I just love how delighted he is that he achieved something. I just, like, his face, his little face. The prison library, when they start working on that together, and like, oh, and he needs an assistant and all that kind of, I just love all of that, like, camaraderie. And like, it's very funny when you think about it, that the criminals are the prison guards, not actually the criminals. Like, you're rooting for the prisoners all the way through this
one. Yeah.
Like, it's so, I love that. The kid passing, when they get the message into him when he's in solitary confinement, and he goes, oh, the kid passed, C plus average, thought you might like to know. And his face, and you're just like, oh no. And you know, if you've rewatched it, you know what's going to happen to the kid, and you're like, this is awful. Like, he's after doing so well and now he's going to be killed.
Yeah.
And
Brooke, I actually, when you describe it like this.
I told you. And then Brooks is the Brooks scene kills me. Like, when you, like, I just, like, every time I rewatch that, you know, when you get to a certain point in a film, you've seen it so many times, you're like, I just want to pause it here so that Brooks does not leave the prison. And he's fine, and he's just with Jake, and everything is grand, and I don't have to think about it anymore. But the second he leaves, and everything he's trying to deal with, you're just like, no, I can't. This is so, so sad.
And sorry, go for it, Andrea.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, it brings up as well, and like, I always remember my dad kind of saying this to me too, it brings up a really interesting conversation about like being institutionalized and like the power of that and the loneliness and like the emptiness outside, that you've got these, you know, like these men in prison that actually don't even want to leave because that's their life and it's all they know and they don't know any better and there's nothing for them, and probably the feeling of nobody wanting them or caring for them on the outside, that there's a sense of people know you and you belong to something. And like, I remember we used to often have conversations about that and about being institutionalized. And like, in a really, really, really weird random comparison, at the time when I was watching this, I was one of the times I was actually starting in boarding school. And I remember my dad used to kind of slag me, and he used to always say, like, he used to say to me, this is going to be like Shawshank Redemption. Like, you won't want to leave the school. Like, you're going to be so institutionalized because you'll have lived there and you eat there and you're friends with everyone there and it's all you know. And like, so it was like, obviously it was nothing like that, but you know what I mean?
You weren't breaking out in the middle of the night or anything like that. No.
He used to always have this, you know, because initially, I suppose years ago in boarding schools, when you wouldn't have been allowed to like go home every weekend, and we wouldn't have been home every weekend either. But he used to always, like, we used to have this nearly, Shawshank Redemption nearly became this like point of reference for sort of comedy, like, where we'd kind of refer to it as, you know, my Andy Dufresne moment of, am I breaking out this weekend and going home, you know. And it's kind of mad, like, but that was another point that I suppose I wanted to mention, was just about the whole idea of being institutionalized. And like, I wonder how common that is. I imagine probably more so back then, but like, you know, you'd imagine that there probably is a bit of that still in kind of society today as well, which, you know, when you see it been played out like that, it's obviously very sad too, you know. Just to add to your list there of emotional moments too, I thought I'd offer that.
Well, like, it's grim. Like, it's just so grim from, like, until he gets out, it's grim.
Yeah.
To be fair.
It absolutely is. By the way, Sue, I've got six. Did you read out six moments of fear? Like, you're missing one here.
Sorry. My Andy doing the stock take. So when he says, red, I just passed over by accident. When he says, and then he needed an assistant, and the camera pulls back, and Red's sitting in the next room, and he's got his little desk, and the two of them are like buddies. I can't deal with it. Like, anything like that, like old men being friends, I'm gone. Yeah. Like,
There's loads there. There's this list. I mean, we need to publish and get out the seven deadly moments of the Shawshank Redemption. Like, I do think that the Brooks moment is up there as the most heartbreaking scene in cinema ever. The only thing that can hold a candle to it is the opening montage of Up, which obviously can do it with literal animation. They literally have to draw a man as old and cute and sweet as this guy in Shawshank Redemption. To do this in a non-animated, in a live-action movie, is an achievement. And it's just absolutely heart-wrenching. I would challenge anybody to come up with a more heartbreaking moment than that Brooks scene. And they also drag it out for, what is it, 6-7 minutes? Like, that could have been done in 2 minutes. But they're like, nah, we are going to absolutely torture the audience here with this. And everybody's heart comes away broken. It's also really interesting what you said there about being institutionalized, Andrea, because this is, sometimes I find it hard to like find a connection between real life and a movie about people being imprisoned in the middle of the 20th century. But it is kind of weird rewatching this during lockdown, and that idea of not becoming institutionalized, but sort of semi-Stockholm syndrome that people might be experiencing in the world at the moment. Like, say if lockdown gets ended tomorrow in Ireland, and people who've been stuck at home for 12 months are told, all right, go back to normal life. Of course, it'd be great. But I presume every single person will be like, ooh, I'm a little bit nervous about this. I'm a little bit uneasy about actually stepping back out. And there was just an air of that about listening to Morgan Freeman, listening to Red talk about his experience of thinking about freedom again.
I completely agree with you. And I think even watching that film now, rewatching it, like, you know, now this year or even in 2020, it totally strikes up that. And particularly if you're somebody who's living on your own and you're working at home. Like, there's absolutely, I know that's a conversation I'm having with my own friends at the moment, where it's like, Jesus, I'm living in an apartment or I'm renting a place on my tod, and I'm not in the office, and I literally have not seen a coworker in, you know, the guts of maybe 12, 13 months for some of my friends. And there's a little bit of anxiety around, like, social interaction again, and what that's going to be like with people and striking up conversation. And even I have friends who are, you know, some of my friends chatting and they're single, and they're like, how do you even talk to people, you know, on the outside again? Like, how do you even do that? And, like, I think it's when you watch the film now, having, as you pointed out, going through lockdown, like, it's probably the closest a lot of us will ever identify, you'd hope anyway, you know, that level of kind of isolation / prison / institutionalized, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it's the idea of something being, I love when Morgan Freeman says, like, I don't know how I deal with the Pacific, it's so big. And, like, I'm nearly at the point now, because I went on maternity leave in December of 2019, and I basically haven't left the house since. Like, obviously, I've been out and about, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I am at the point now where I'm like, what's it like to go outside the county? Or, like, get on a plane? Like, I haven't been in a plane in, like, over two years, like. And it's just, it is kind of daunting. And I was saying to my husband the other day as well, that, like, there's that thing of, I haven't been a first-time mom in terms of, like, getting my child out of the house and, like, bringing her on trips or doing any of that kind of stuff that new moms do. Like, she's literally been in the house with me all the time. So if I ever have another kid, I'm going to have to go and do that process all over again. Like, I've just never done it. And it's been this really weird experience. And that's what I love about work, because the word is big, and it does feel like that. It just feels like everything outside of here is just, like, so hard to take on, you know?
And it is kind of, it's that for me sort of comes back to that nearly a little bit of a kind of a simplicity of it, like, that sometimes maybe overlooked, but they just do it really well. And, like, that scene you talked about as well, you know, where they're having the beers on top of the on the rooftop, like, that for me is probably one of the best scenes in the entire movie. Like, and it's just so, it's so simple, and you can, like, everyone kind of, like, can take a bit of enjoyment out of watching that. So I just wanted to mention that when you'd flagged it, because it was probably one of my favorite parts of the whole movie. Like,
yeah,
and that's the signifier of any great television show or movie is if it can hit home with you, regardless of what it's about. Like if you end up projecting the movie onto yourself, it's done something right. Like we've spoken in the past about how The Godfather manages to do that, despite the fact that it's a gangster movie and nobody has any relation to these characters. The same with The Sopranos, and it manages to do that. I think Shawshank falls under that category as well. Like we have got nothing in common with a banker from the 1940s in the United States, and yet we feel all these really emotional, personal things about what they do and what they get up to in this movie.
I love as well, Omar, he, you know, there's this kind of part in it too where you're rooting for him, where he's like, he starts doing the governor's, you know, pension policies and investments, and he's like, he's roped everybody in on this, and it's like, you know, the cute local lad, like, knowing what he's after, but it's kind of, everyone can sort of identify with that sort of jack of all trade person that they know as well.
Yeah. So yeah.
There's nothing kind of, I don't know, you'd kind of laugh, and I find that really entertaining.
Yeah, it's like a freelance journalist stumbling upon a really good accountant, yes. And somebody who can do their taxes for them.
Yeah, right. And you can see us all talking, you know, go home, she and he's really
yeah, good. Yeah.
I love that about Andy though, because he just like, I love that his character, when you see him first, you're like, this guy is not going to survive in prison at all. Like he's so, he just got like, the word I wrote down was wimp. He just comes across as such a wimp at the start. And I love the bet that Freeman has that he thinks, you know, oh, you cost me whatever, how many packets of cigarettes, he didn't make a sound that entire night. And then he just turns everything on its head all the way through, because he actually is brave. Like everything he does is so brazen. And you're like, how is he going to get away with this stuff? Like the beer thing, the playing the music when he's not supposed to do that, like answering the warden back. You're like, oh my God, this guy is going to get absolutely annihilated. And I love that about him, because everyone underestimates him all the way through the film. All the way to the end, right to the end, they're still underestimating him. And he still manages to pull it out from under them. I just love that about his character. I think he's brilliant.
You sort of forget the opening scenes of the whole movie where he's like just been accused of murder.
Murder.
Yeah. And like, and by the end of it then you're like, totally did it, you know. You know, but you nearly forget why it moves so far on from how he ever ended up in prison in the first place. Like,
yeah,
you
know?
Yeah.
Do you think he did it?
Oh, 100%.
You think he did it?
Yeah.
Really?
Oh yeah, 100%. There's no way he got away with all that stuff and Shawshank didn't do that. No way.
That's fascinating. I just assumed everyone thought he didn't do it.
Oh no, 100% he did.
Right, this is actually interesting. I actually kind of glossed over that there for a moment. Right, okay. So
it's funny because you watch the film and you completely forget, and you kind of are left at the end going, "What? Like, whatever happened at the start again?"
Yeah.
Kind of forget that, like.
So you don't believe the guy Elmo with the weird laugh who owns up to it. So you think that he was just pretending to commit the murder just for the crack, and he's just a psychopath?
I just think Andy is such a, like, there's so many strands to him. Like, as you were saying, Sue, there, that you don't see and you utterly underestimate him throughout this entire movie, and he manages to, like do all the booking or the bookkeeping and the accounting and all the fraud and dig his way out of a prison. Like, I just think it's very believable that he could have done this.
I just can't. I actually am so, I'm so shocked, because I don't think I've ever encountered anyone who said he did it. Like,
this is conspiracy theory stuff. This is really interesting. Like, now that you say it, the man is clearly a psychopath. Like, there's no way. I think you're right.
But even if he didn't, it's so possible that he could. Like, I definitely don't think he's this, like, there's way more to him than we see in, like, from when you first meet him, obviously, and you get, as soon as you get to know him, it becomes more believable that he definitely could do it. So,
yeah. Like, I mean, Shawshank Redemption equals whodunit? Question mark is going to be the name of this podcast, because, this is brilliant stuff. Like, I guess what I would say to maybe challenge that a little bit is that you can be a psychopath and show serial killer tendencies without actually being a killer. Like, maybe he didn't actually do it, but he wanted to do it.
He could have done it.
Yeah, but I think he did want to do it. I think he probably establishes that, doesn't he, at the very start, where he's like, I was waiting in the car. Wow.
Who knew there was so much to this? We'll have to do a second run.
100%.
I'm sure he watched it again. I feel like I've missed something.
Yeah.
Like, missed all the clues.
how you watch it, and like you nearly forget about it. Like it's like it's happened so early on at the start. I know there's bits throughout the movie or whatever, but it's not like it's like that should be nearly in a normal film. That would be the whole plot of the movie would be that nearly, and yet that becomes such a side feature of it. Like
yeah.
The thing we also wanted to touch on here is some of the really grim moments. I know, like, Sue, you've got your tears diary. I think you've also got a log of really grim things that happen here, because I don't know about you, Andrea, but like I guess I'd only watched it once before you watching it for this, but I would have definitely thought Shawshank was like PG, bordering on general universal sort of standard. And like rewatching it, I'm like, not a hope. I don't know what it is, but I'm like, would you show this to a child? I'm not sure I would personally. Maybe you would, but it's just unbelievably grim, and it's got a lot of darkness to it that I just didn't recall the first time.
Yeah, I was trying to think about that. As I said to you, I think I was around 13, maybe 12 or 13. Must have been probably more like 13, maybe, when I saw it. It was definitely very early days in secondary school. But I would have assumed it was like older than that would have been the rating for a movie like this, because there's definitely a couple of like violent scenes in it, like, so I would have assumed. What is it, Sue?
I don't know. I think it might be 18s, actually.
Is it?
Well, the rape scenes would certainly lend me to believe that it would be.
Yeah, without being visceral, though, I guess is probably like that. That's kind of where I would actually kind of.
Yeah, it should be like.
Yeah, like change when I like.
It's kind of rotten.
Yeah. I don't know. I think that it, like, some of the content is like disturbing.
But it's rated R in the States, so restrictive viewing.
Right.
So probably like, about 15s.
What for you are the moments that are like, hold on a minute, this is actually more grim than I realized?
Me?
Yeah.
I think the sisters thing at the start, like I think I was saying this to you before. The redemption is so unbelievable at the end that you just forget everything that's come before. And when you go back and rewatch it, you're like, oh my God, what this guy goes through is absolutely unbelievable. The sisters going after him constantly, beating him up. And then you said, like Morgan Freeman says, oh, you know, they went after Andy for 2 years. And you're like, 2 years? Think about that. Like, he's in a prison for 2 years getting constantly beaten up and abused. I think that's like particularly grim. The when he goes to see the warden, that poor guy Tommy, like, that absolutely kills me every time I think about it. Like, he was probably just trying to do the right thing. This guy is helping him do exams. He quite likes him. He's heard a story. He tells him, and he gets shot for it. You're just like, when are they going to let that? I think what really hit home for me is when you're watching it first, the first night when they go in, and there's that guy. They all have bets on who's going to break first. And there's the guy across the way, he's like crying, saying, I can't be in here, and this isn't me. And he gets beaten up pretty badly. And then they find out the next day that he's died. And you're like, right, okay, this is where I am. This is this kind of film. Like, it's not, they're not going to not go over this. Like, that's pretty shocking. Like, I completely forgot that guy died. I remembered the scene, but I completely forgot about the conversation the next morning where they say, yeah, like, nobody came to him during the night. He died by the time anyone made it to him. You're like, oh my God. Like, it's just, there's nothing, like you were saying about Orange is the New Black, Andre, like, there's so many, like, redeeming, not redeeming, but there's like, nice bits in that. They really give you all the grim stuff that happens to the prisoners, and they really make out the prison guards to be such villains. Like,
you utterly, like, you know, it's, normally, I suppose those kind of movies are more like the good guys and the bad guys, and like in this, you know, and I know you said it earlier, like, you're totally, you like shouting at the TV for the prisoners in this case, like, because the prison officers are just, the characters are so unlikable throughout the whole movie, like, except for the governor. There is a part at the start where you do kind of like the governor or the warden.
At the start, yeah.
Start, but yeah.
And then,
I feel having spoken to you today, my whole emotion around this movie has actually changed.
But I felt that as, but this is exactly the same thing I had, because when I went to, I was like, oh, Shawshank, yes, and then I was like, all right, I'm going to take, and obviously I've never actually sat down and taken notes on Shawshank while I was watching it. And as I was taking the notes, I was like, this is a really brutal film. Like, it's really difficult to watch. And it was only when I was writing it down and I was like, right, so he gets constantly abused and then he gets put in the hole a couple of times. A couple of guys die. And then I was like, right, okay, this is actually just really depressing.
Mm. Yeah, no,
probably
really.
Our advice in all of this would be maybe don't take notes. Maybe don't watch it initially. When I was a kid watching it, or a teenager watching it, early days, like, it's you don't watch it like that. Like, you know, probably when there's a violent scene, you know, I would have been hiding my head behind a cushion, or, you know what I mean? Like, you're not watching it in the same way as you do, obviously, when you're older. Like,
yeah, I definitely think this. I said this is the dad film, because the first time I watched it was with my dad.
And really,
dads love this film. There's something that's a real, like,
yeah, moment.
Yeah, there you go.
But, like, I don't know. I definitely think it like, on rewatches, it just takes a different. You forget the thing about, like, where you can join it at any stage. You kind of forget how many, when you joined up, how many bad parts are by the time he gets there. And you really feel, when you really pay attention to it, you really feel the redemption then, because you're like, thanks be to fucking God, he's after getting out of there. Like, that place is awful.
Yeah.
That's the way I felt as I was watching it this time, you know?
Well, what do you, like, so what other aspects is there when you talk about, like, it being a dad movie then, Sue? What do you refer to there?
I think it's the, like Andrea was saying before, it's the loyalty and the friendship between the two guys. And, like, men are so bad at, like, my dad's going to freaking kill me for talking about him on this, but, like, my dad's one of those guys who gets about 3 or 4 pints in and he loves everyone. And he's just like, oh, that you're my best friend. Like, my dad's friend, one of his really good friends, passed away a few years ago, and he'd only ever talk about him when he was drunk, like, when he was like, oh, my best. And I think that's what it, like, it just allows men to talk about that, or to think about it a little bit in terms of what their friendships are like. And I don't know why particularly it's dads, but it just definitely feels like a dad film to me.
It also, it's the kind of the relationship, like the bond that develops between these two really unlikely characters, you know, that would never have happened on the outside, and the kind of the taking them in and looking out for them a bit. And like, I don't know what it is. Like, I don't know why my dad actually ever liked it initially, because it's kind of not something he would probably have gone for when I think back now. But like, it was, I remember he really wanted to see it, and I remember, like, me probably, you know, agitating to get watching it with him, and then watching the movie. And we watched it on so many occasions, and we watched it, like, not terribly long before he died. And I don't know how it came about. We used to watch movies on a Saturday night, and one night we're like, oh, we'll just stick this on. And we were chatting about it afterwards, and we're kind of like, isn't it kind of mad how when you watch it in later years, like, how it's, you sort of, you're so nearly, like, you know, in love with the prisoners in it, and they're the good guys. And like, it's just, there's so, I don't know, maybe that's why I feel it's a bit, I don't know, maybe uplifting isn't the right word, but probably that's where maybe I got that that feeling for it, or emotion for it from.
No, it definitely, it leaves you with a feeling of being uplifted though. Like, the whole, with them, I love to think of Andy Dufresne and Reg living out their days in this lovely beach with their boat and their hotel, and they, like, have as many cigarettes as they want. Like, yes. I love that idea.
I wonder, Andrea, as well, like, that I suppose you watched this with him a couple of years ago, and maybe there's a part of that feeling whenever you watch for the first time, whatever it was, the late 90s, and knowing that you left that movie feeling hopeful and feeling good about life at the end of Shawshank, I think everybody does. And if you're watching it down the line, you're thinking of childhood happiness, which is essentially what yeah. You were a child and feeling happy after watching a movie. And there's a nostalgic trip to rewatching it in that sort of setting from your perspective, I'd imagine.
Oh, definitely. And I suppose particularly when I watched it maybe in the last kind of 2 years or 2.5 years, say, with Dad, like, yeah, maybe that's what it is. Maybe there was, like, obviously the, you know, nostalgia looking back at early days watching it, kind of then watching it nearly at the, you know, probably towards the end of his life, and us rewatching this thing we'd watched together initially. Like, maybe that's probably a huge component of it as well for me. Like, but it was something, I know we watched it quite a bit in between, and I don't know why. Was it that it used to be on at Christmas, or I don't even know if it was. Like, I don't know. Maybe we used to have it on one of the table over something. I don't root it out. Netflix.
It's always, it's one of those films that's always on as well, because they got it cheap as chips to be able to show it, like, so they were just able to show it, yeah, so they were able to show it so many times over and over. And I think that there was, like, an unreal amount of video cassettes sent out when it was first issued, like, so it was just one of those ones that always seemed like it was really cheap to rent or really cheap to buy, and
did the rounds massively because everyone wanted to see it because everyone was talking about this film. Morgan Freeman was talking about that in a Graham Norton interview. He was like, movie companies have yet to realize that the big marketing tool is word of mouth. And that, like, everyone just talking about this film made it the biggest film of all time, which is unbelievable. Like,
We have a video shop in at home in Ballyshannon in Donegal called The Video Shop. And, like, you go in there on Saturday night and, you know, you'd rent, we used to rent like two films. We were allowed to get, like, you know, you got like the real film, which might be your Shawshank Redemption, and then you'd get your like silly comedy or something that you'd watch in advance, like, you know, your
the main friend, like, before the main event
season or something as well to watch with it. So,
your two movies,
The Video Shop in Ballyshannon.
And it was actually one of the, like, I worked in Extravision for like 4 years, and it was one of the films, like, there was a kind of rotating group of films that you put on that didn't actually take that much, like, for, of you to watch, but you could tune into scenes. Shawshank was one of them. Old School was randomly another one. Scooter Rock was another one. Like, there were just ones that you could just put on in the background and everyone kind of liked. And if they came, like there'd be people come in and you'd see them just like, we'd TVs that were in the middle of the thing, and they're just like standing there watching like Shawshank Redemption in the middle of the shop. But it is definitely what, like, you could just join it at any point, like,
Funny as well, it's not a film I'd like to watch in a cinema.
Right.
Really?
Why not?
Yeah, I don't know. I just think on big screen it's not, I just prefer to see it in, like, at home. Like, I think it's, do there are some movies are just really lend themselves to the cinema. Like, I don't think it does.
And some movies really lend themselves to television. And I think Shawshank really does that.
Yeah.
It's just a kind of a, I don't know, it's like a small,
yeah, it feels like an extended TV movie. Like a better TV movie.
Yeah.
Definitely. There are a couple of other questions we want to get to. Before that, though, there is a couple of nuggets here and there we haven't got to see. There is, like, in the film buff section here, where you inform us on everything that we don't know about Shawshank Redemption. Yeah. There's a lot of good stuff here. Like, talk to us about Red. I mean, there's like, you've read the Stephen King novella here. Educate us on Red.
Yeah, my dad picked up the Stephen King book ages ago. My dad's one of these people that loves going into secondhand bookshops and picking up absolutely everything. But he'll never admit it, he's a massive Stephen King fan. And he picked that up, and I thought it was a book. I didn't realize it was like a short story, and it's like a basic collection, because on the front of it is the picture from Shawshank when he gets out of the prison. And like, it's just so short. Like, it's kind of really disappointing when you watch the film and you go to this, because you're expecting everything from the film to be in this book, and it's not, because it's so short. But Red is accused of killing his wife and his daughter, which they obviously don't deal with in the film at all. And I think consciously, because they don't want you to think of Red as like a bad guy who's going to kill his wife and his daughter. He loses in a poker game and he kills them, as far as I remember. Now, it's years ago since I read it. And he's Irish in it, so he's white and he has red hair, and he's an Irish guy. And that's why, you know, the scene where he's like throwing the baseball and he's like, why do they call you Red? And he's like, oh, because maybe it's because I'm Irish. That's the nod to it. But I really like that about what they did. Like, they really went for the best character they thought Red could be. Yeah. So they went for the Morgan Freeman, and they went for the great voiceover, and they didn't stick to what he is in the book. And, like, side point, actually, that scene where he's doing the baseball thing, he did it for like 9 hours straight trying to shoot that scene, and didn't complain any of the way through. Morgan Freeman didn't complain any of the way through it. And the next day he turned up in a sling, because his arm was so sore from just like constantly throwing a baseball for like 9 hours. So, like,
how did it take them so long?
They kept reshooting the scenes. They had to reset, and I presume it's to do with lighting and all that kind of stuff, but it took them ages to shoot that scene, and his arm was practically dead by the end of the scene. Like,
wow.
So, yeah, it's just a red side point. But that's I love that they just committed to the best interpretation of that character, and that Stephen King loves that as well. Like, he loves this. He always considers this the best adaptation of any of his books. And I love that about Red. I just think I think he was a bad guy, and he definitely atones. Whereas you have Andy, who now we think is a murderer, but just kind of gets away with it, you know.
we're never going to get over this revelation here. Like, this has been.
I'd like to point out again, I'm really not a big movie buff. You know what I mean? You know, this is my Peter's pub chat. that you're hearing now on podcast.
There are a couple of other things we want to get to. First of all, we never asked you at the top here, Andrea. How many times have you actually seen Shawshank, if you had to put a rough number on it?
I'd say about 6 or 7.
6 or 7.
Yeah, and I'd say the most recent, aside from obviously now before this week, I'd say it was probably, the last time actually prior to that would have been with my dad. So that would have been 2.5 years ago, I'd say.
Right.
But I'd say easy 6, 7 times, yeah.
And I know we've kind of touched on this a little bit, but if you had to pick one thing that changes with you down through the years, down through those 6 or 7 watches of the movie, what would that one thing be?
I realised Andy Dufresne did this. Well, let me rephrase that. I think was certainly capable anyway. I think the loyalty aspect of it for me was probably the big thing that struck me down through the years. Or maybe I just realized that. Maybe initially watching it, I probably didn't. But I think the loyalty element of it, in more recent years would have been probably the theme that kind of struck me more than that I never really noticed before. Or certainly hadn't paid a huge amount of attention to.
Mm-hmm. The last question, this is important. The on the TV test quiz here. Well, it's not really a quiz. It's just a yes or no answer. If it's on the TV, are you watching it? And this is basically if it's on and you've missed the first half an hour, if it's on and you missed the first 2 hours of it, are you watching the rest of it? Is it one of those that you can just watch a section of and sit up and get away from it again?
100%. Yeah, absolutely. If I went home now and was flicking through and it came on, I'd be like, oh, I'm tuning here. It's like, you still get that surprise when he throws the stone at the poster. I just think it's really well done. Everything about it, like, and the whole thing is nearly set in the prison. And it's just like, but I think it's just the contrast of maybe been so different to every other film like that maybe that's kind of what makes it, I don't know, probably, I don't want to say easy watch, but like, there is something about the film, I think, that makes it sort of easy to watch and to rewatch. But I definitely will be able to watch it for an 8th, 9th, and 10th time anyway.
I 100% agree with that. I think that, so we've got this thing that we do as well called the hangover rating. And I think a lot of things, like basically, would you watch the movie hungover? And a lot of what happens in the movie shouldn't be conducive to a hangover movie. But I actually don't think so. I think I'd put this on, I put this at an 8.7 out of 10 on the hangover scale, to be honest, because it is so easy watching it. Yes, there's a lot of grim things that happen, but it is really uplifting. I think it's totally watchable in that state.
Oh, completely. Absolutely.
I can't do it. It's too emotional for me. Like, I'm a really bad, like, emotional hangover person. So, like, I just sit there absolutely in tears, and it just, like, I have to have something that's like in some way, like, I suppose if I could just watch it from the bit where he gets out, I'd be fine. Up to that point, it's just too much for me.
The last scene where they're on the beach.
Yeah, just the nice bits.
All will be well.
Yeah, get it on RTE 1 plus 1 and start watching it an hour late on RTE 1 plus 1. Absolutely fine. Andrea, thanks so much for joining us. We've established loads of it. There are 7 moments where you can break down crying in it, and that this is actually a whodunit. This is actually a true crime movie, and it's not a story of...
I'm really, you know, strictly following Line of Duty at the moment, and everybody tells me I should be in AC-12, so, like, this is my AC-12 moment, starting with Shawshank Redemption.
It's a good one. You're going to be remembered for it.
This has been Let's Go Back To. This has obviously been with the Shawshank Redemption. We've been looking back on that. We've also done episodes on Ferris Bueller's Day Off and The Dark Knight, and there's plenty more to come. You can follow us on Twitter. You can drop us a DM or drop us a tweet. If you've got any suggestions of things you want us to go back and watch. We have, of course, been joined by Andrea Gilligan, host of News Talks Lunchtime Live. Andrea, take care. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks, guys.
Subscribe to this podcast for free on the Go Loud app.